This is Dear Analyst, episode number 49, and this episode is going to be a quick one. I just wanted to talk about a story I read, and this is kind of piggybacking off of a bunch of these Excel errors that lead to a bunch of mistakes. I talked about a website called Eurosprig a couple episodes ago about how these different stories basically are aggregated in this Eurosprig website, which is a website of just like a bunch of risk and risk analysts who are trying to prevent errors in Excel. And I promise I'll try to keep these stories to a minimum, but I just thought this one was really fun and interesting, and I thought I'd just share it on this this episode. So it's 2016. And Tesla Motors, everyone knows, is thinking about buying a solar panel company called Solar City. The deal is worth $2.6 billion. And Solar City, at the time, right before the deal closed, they hired an investment bank, Lazard Investment Bank, to help them with the due diligence and basically structuring the deal. So as a part of this this process, you know, SolarCity has to give over a bunch of spreadsheets to Lazard, the investment bank, so Lazard can do the discounted cash flow analysis to figure out how much the shares should be worth, or how much the equity should be worth. And SolarCity is providing the spreadsheets. Lazard's crunching the numbers, and Lazard ends up coming back with a range for the equity per share of $14.75 to $34 even per share. And Elon Musk and the board, they look at this deal and they end up doing some due diligence themselves, and they go ahead and take the deal. So $2.6 billion purchase from Elon and Tesla of SolarCity. And they valued the deal between the shares between $14 and $34. I think the ultimate purchase price was they paid with Tesla stock. It was equivalent to $25.37 per share, right? So everything looks fine. A couple months later, they found that there was a mistake in the analysis. And the analysis was done by Lazard on SolarCity-provided spreadsheets. Now, just to give you some background about how this analysis was done, Elon Musk is one of the major shareholders in SolarCity. And before the deal went through, he wanted to make it seem like there was no impropriety, that he was doing things above the line. And he didn't want to make it seem like that there was some kind of shady things going on behind the scenes. And I think also the CEO of SolarCity is also Elon Musk's first cousin. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of kind of potential shadiness that could happen because of them two being related, and also because Elon owns a majority of the shares in, is one of the majority shareholders in SolarCity. So what Elon Musk does is he sets up a special kind of governance risk assessment group to look at the deal. And this is probably similar to some of the issues that the Eurosprig people talk about. He sets up a special committee governance board to make sure that everything that they are doing with this deal is legal, it's transparent, and everything is done correctly. And the people that he hired were actually independent outside advisors to make sure that this was done correctly. And these people were Lazard. And so when Lazard did the analysis, they realized after they closed on the deal that they had double counted the indebtedness of SolarCity. So they're double counting some of the debt that Solar City owed. And therefore, because they had double counted the debt, the range of shares, of the share price that they given the offer, was lower than what the discount cash flow analysis should have been. So as I said earlier, the range that Lazard provided was $14.75 to $34 per share. And it turns out, because they double counted the debt, the actual range was $18.75 to $37.75. And it's estimated that SolarCity was discounted by $400 million because of this spreadsheet error. And the tricky thing here is that in the S-4 that was filed by the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, it turns out these spreadsheets, the error was actually in the spreadsheets that SolarCity provided to Lazard, the investment bank. So it wasn't like Lazard accidentally double counted things because they were being, you know, irresponsible or lazy. This error was actually already existing in the spreadsheets that SolarCity provided to the bank. And so this begs a question, or raises the question, on whether or not it was the fault of internal operations or finance folks at SolarCity. They should have caught this issue before they handed over the Excel files to Lazard. Or was it the responsibility of Lazard, the investment bank, to catch these errors, even though they didn't cause the errors themselves? As an outside third party, they just assumed that the spreadsheets that SolarCity provided were up to snuff and were correct. But in reality, it turns out they were not so correct. And so they're kind of, you know, it's all about the whole garbage in, garbage out concept. And I think this shows an interesting dynamic between a company and also an outside auditor or financial, you know, third party who is trying to evaluate your books. If the data is not even correct to begin with, then chances are that the bank, in this case Lazard, is going to be building a model that's completely way off, in this case off by $400 million off of a $2.6 billion purchase. And so after the deal closed and they discovered this error, Lazard and the rest of the other parties, Tesla, SolarCity, said that this would not have really materially changed the deal price and the ultimate closing of the deal. But people are saying that the shareholders probably would have been a lot more aggravated or upset, or they should have just been made aware of this error, because they probably would have cared about whether or not SolarCity could have counteroffered for a higher purchase price. So there's a lot of different parties at stake here, and just goes to show again how a simple double counting error in this case in the SolarCity spreadsheets led to a really, really big undervaluation of the company. And great for Tesla as well, because they got a great deal to buy this company and have them merge into the Tesla family of products. So that's just a quick story I wanted to share with this interesting story I found from, actually I don't even remember how I found this story, but just the fact that Tesla was involved in this just made this story a lot more interesting. And yeah, there's also a link to the S-4 that this error is mentioned in, and you can take a look, read through yourself, and see kind of how the different parties were thinking about this quote-unquote, they call it a computational error, but the computational error was simply SolarCity's spreadsheets were just messed up and that they double counted their debt, and that just led to some really bad things. All right, so that is going to be the quick story for today in this episode of Dear Analyst. And in the second half of this episode, I want to talk about one other episode that I listened to recently, and it's from the Shop Talk show. I've talked about this podcast quite a few times in previous podcasts, and this is episode number 432 with Sean Wang, who is also known as Swix on Twitter. I believe he works at Netlify. I want to guess. Let me just double check. Looks like, sorry, just pulling up the interwebs. Actually, I'm not too sure. I'm pretty sure he works for LinkedIn, or not LinkedIn, for Netlify. And the around minute 13, they're talking about, Dave and Chris are talking about how Microsoft was had this. Microsoft was talking about how there were they wanted to encourage more developers to, or sorry, not, they wanted to encourage non-developers to come in to build like simple no-code AI workflows on the Microsoft developer platform. And they specifically were saying they wanted to target non-developers. And this led to the conversation. This led the conversation going into something about how a lot of people in their day-to-day jobs, they may actually be coding and doing things that look like coding without really even knowing it, and don't know the extent to which that they're coding as well. And what I'm trying to say is, when you're trying to solve a problem at work and you're using a spreadsheet, you're working in some other platform, some other workplace tool, you're trying to stretch that tool to do something that is automated for you and works for your team and your workflow. And you don't realize it, but you may actually be doing some basic scripting if you're using SQL, or if you're using Excel and VBA, you're doing some scripting in VBA to automate things. And it just shows this trend of people that are becoming what I've heard the term being called citizen developers. And in this episode, Sean talks about how he started in finance. As many of you out there also probably do, you start in finance, you're working in Excel, you're building a bunch of financial models, and or you're building a bunch of tools, which is what I was doing more of, and you realize that, hey, I can probably automate some parts of my job. Why don't I do a macro for this? Why don't I record a macro? And you record the macro, you realize the macro does what you want to do, and then you realize, wait, what is this language behind this macro stuff? Oh, it's Visual Basic for applications, VBA. Now I can automate even more stuff by kind of writing some basic code, some if-then statements or whatever, doing some active cell stuff with VBA. And next thing you know, you're kind of scripting stuff a little bit to just automate really rote tasks in Excel using VBA, whether it's copying and pasting between spreadsheets or applying a bunch of formatting to a spreadsheet. You're now digging into the world of VBA, and you're thinking from this mindset of how do I automate and remove all the repetitive work in my day-to-day Excel data munging. And then Sean talks about how, okay, well, once you get into the VBA and you realize you have much more data in your Excel file that Excel is meant to hold, and Excel ends up not being the best platform to process and analyze all the data. Now let's move into Python, which is meant to take in millions and millions of rows of data points to do interesting analyses. And it just, he talks about the evolution of how he went from just building regular formulas in Excel and moved to Python. I think he talked about Haskell, Camel, a bunch of other programming languages to automate tasks. And I think that's the evolution that a lot of you out there probably go on when you start off as an Excel or a financial analyst, and you move on to realize there's so much more you can do with VBA, with scripting. But the I think the on-ramp to getting into these tools is usually it kind of is the onus is on you as the citizen developer, so to speak, to be curious about these different tools. For instance, when I started learning about Google AppScript, and I talked quite a bit about Google AppScript in previous episodes, I was watching some of their YouTube videos for learning Google AppScript, and the YouTube videos were, it definitely seemed like, excuse me, the YouTube videos were aimed at like non-developers and non-quote-unquote technical people, because the videos would be like, do you want to just simply send an email and then it automatically creates a row in your Google Sheet, and then that triggers like a calendar invite to be sent out? And it was very like, kind of almost like a marketing video, and it made it seem like, oh, like anyone can just pick this up and do it. But it does involve going into the Google script, Google App Script IDE, doing some scripting basically with JavaScript, and building out these workflows that may be kind of new to you if you don't know how to write JavaScript. And luckily, you know, coming from VBA, I know kind of some of the basic structures of putting things together. But I think when these platforms are trying to get non-developers and non-technical people to use their tools, and they try to almost dumb down the tutorials a little bit, it makes it feel like this is, well, I think it's attracting a very small percentage of people who are using those platforms. And in reality, the people they're trying to attract should be people that are in the platforms all day. And they just need that one little nudge to move on to, like, hey, did you know if you can put this stuff in Excel or Google Sheets, you can automate a lot of this stuff with VBA or Google Apps Scripts, respectively. And so what is the right way to nudge that person to knowing that they can build these automated workflows with some basic scripting? I'm not sure, but all these platforms are trying to get all their non-developers and citizen developers to build on top of their platform. And yeah, I don't know. I think I'm just trying to think how the journey can work for all of you Excel analysts out there who are probably used to using Excel formulas and don't realize that you're actually doing a whole bunch of coding. Because Excel is a programming language, I think I've heard multiple people argue that, and I definitely believe it. And I think there's a lot of you out there who have a lot of untapped potential when it comes to using all these other different platforms and going into different programming languages to automate and streamline some of the processes that you have in your day-to-day jobs. So give this episode a listen. I think Sean talks about some really interesting topics, especially related to, yep, you guessed it, using Excel, and how that was kind of like the gateway drug into all the other tools and programming languages that he learns to use today. And I think he also gives a big plug to Free Code Camp, which, by the way, big news, they also released a two-hour, it's kind of a beginner Excel class on Free Code Camp, but it's a beginner Excel class on Free Code Camp that they just released, I think, about a week or two ago. And it goes through all the basics of Excel, and it's a completely free lesson on YouTube. It's two and a half hour lesson. So that's going to conclude this episode of Dear Analyst. Thank you so much for listening.